Blog Talk Radio.
I was alone, I took a ride, I didn't know what I would find there. Another road where maybe I could see another kind of mind there. Ooh, and I suddenly see you. Ooh, did I tell you I need you every single day of my life? You didn't run, you didn't lie, you knew I wanted just to hold you. And had you gone, you knew in time we'd meet again, for I had told you. Ooh, you were meant to be near me. Ooh, and I want you to hear me. What can I do, what can I be, when I'm with you I wanna stay there. If I'm true I'll never leave, and if I do I know the way there. Ooh, and I suddenly see you. Ooh, did I tell you I need you every single day of my life?
Never know what's queued up to run, what's where, when, but this is Blog Talk Radio, brought to you by a team of voices sponsored by the A.P. Taylor Foundation. You could find us on allpoetry.com. Check us out. It's free to join. And that was, of course, the Beatles, unless you're living under a rock somewhere. Or I guess maybe not. I don't know what generation, if they're still popular or not. Who the hell knows? I live under a rock myself, so there you go. I was off their 1966 album, Revolver, and that's all the trivia I have off the top of my head, unfortunately. But, you know, they were a sensation back in the day, and, you know, they invaded the Americas, as they say, the Fab Four. I think that fits the idea of, not so much the sentiment of, you know, the permanence that they talk about in that song, but, you know, just when it comes to memories and things like that, the idea of tonight for me, you know, you talk about a season, a reason, or a lifetime, you know, all those memories, they tend to involve other people. You know, I mean, you've got memories of, you know, the first time you did something or, you know, but usually, you know, it was with someone. And, you know, to me, that's kind of what I tend to focus on, you know, and the idea that sparked this thought for me was, you know, the people that some people drift in and out of your life. Some people, you know, you kind of don't even notice them and you don't even remember them. So, you know, it just turns into one of those, you know, who, but you know, that there's other people that you know, and, sometimes it's briefly and sometimes, you know, it's for your whole life. And that's the phenomenon that I'm thinking of is you know, because you can never really understand, you know, nowadays they talk about ghosting and things like that. And, I don't know, that's a, that's a topic unto itself, I think, because, you know, you've got people in your life and then all of a sudden you just cut them out completely, and it's crazy. But anyways, we're here to talk some of the things that idea inspired. I've got my lovely co-host, Deborah Lee, helping me with the studio tonight. She's hiding in the background. Hi, Debs.
Hey, Rex.
You know,
here.
I was gonna say you don't have to come off mute because I got her slaving away. It's hard work making me look good.
No, it's not.
Well, putting these things out is hard work anyway, and I know, and I won't say I'm fortunate because I feel guilty sometimes because a lot of times I don't get to do half the things I used to do behind the scenes anymore, so it's pretty involved. Upload, download, tag this, and get permission that, and make sure so and so did what they did, and you know, disclaimers and whatnot. It's a pain in the neck. But anyway,
yeah, so sometimes it allows us to shine a spotlight on our fellow poets, and that's what it's all about, right? And doing half is better than doing none.
Yeah, you know, and again, to me, you know, that this is a huge way of getting people into your life, especially because it's the quote unquote it's the internet, you know, so you can meet people from England and Africa and Australia, you know, that you'd never meet otherwise, and I really appreciate it for that. And some people take it in the wrong direction too. It's like, you know, just because I got you on the radio or whatever, or I can talk to you, then all of a sudden they take that as an opening to harass you. It's like, no, let me get to know you first at least. You know, it's crazy how people get the wrong idea sometimes and they run in the wrong direction. You know, that goes down to boils down to perspective, I think, too. You know, because I tend to say a lot of times, you know, I've heard a lot of times people say things like, you know, I thought you were my friend, but you know, the bottom line is some people just have different ideas of what friendship is. And you know, again, to me, that also goes to that season and reason and lifetime thought too. It's like, you know, some people maintain friendships differently than others, and some people value them more or treat them differently. It's like they'll go out of their way. It'll be like, you know, oh no, I haven't talked to you in 6 years, and then you know, all of a sudden they'll just start talking like, you know, you never went anywhere. That's something I really appreciate. I take it for granted, you know, when I first came to Team of Voices, how long I've known you. You know, it's like all of a sudden it's like, you know, oh, now I got a Deb, now I got an AP. And then you get to know people a little better as time goes on, and you interact a little more and you get to know them a little better. And I guess, you know, your relationship evolves. And I think the beauty behind that, too, is, you know, different people bring out different things in each other. You know, some people might not think AP is funny, and some people that get to know him are like, oh, AP's hysterical, you know. It's all what you bring out in each other, you know.
Absolutely. But,
yeah.
And then there's you either sometimes click or sometimes you're just like magnets that you can't quite push together because they're the forces fighting each other. And then there's the ones who you get really close to and realize that you had no clue about the real them. About changes in the seasons, you know. And there are, like you had said already, the people that you spend a lot of time with and then you don't see them for a while and then you just fall right back in like you just saw them yesterday. And then there's others that you've changed so much that there's awkward silence and it's just neither one of you are the same. Maybe you don't click anymore. There's so many different ways or reasons, I guess is a better word, for people to become like the weather. It changes. It's just the same.
The expression that comes to mind is you know, people they grow, but sometimes they grow together and sometimes they grow apart. You know, that's you know, just different paths that we take sometimes. I don't know. And then, you know, the other thing too is some people put themselves out there in a huge way. You know, they'll expose themselves emotionally and bleed on the page, and, you know, people will read that and they'll feel like, you know, oh, you know, I feel like I know this person forever. And, you know, they don't know them. So one person will have more of a connection than the other person. So I don't know. It's just an unusual dynamic, I guess.
Yeah, and I think with us and the other poets, it's sort of like from hearing each other's poems and reading and whatnot.
Yeah.
It's between the stuff that's relatable and the stuff that just is singularly them kind of combined. And when you really think about it, night after night, week after week, month after month, we spend way more time with the people that we write poetry with in the like-minded ways than we do with some family and friends, because a lot of people don't get poetry, not to steer it all to poetry, but you know, they might think, oh, well, you know, that's a silly waste of time, and they don't get the therapeutic value of it. But that, I think, is another topic, and we're steering away from the fact. But that would be one of a ton of reasons that people grow apart.
Yeah.
Just interests, you know.
Absolutely, it's definitely a contributing factor, you know. And you know, like you mentioned, the magnets. You know, you gravitate towards people that are like-minded. You know, if you like to cook, you know, it's likely you're going to bump into someone else, you know, in the grocery store or something, and they'll start talking. And then, you know, next thing you know, it's an hour later, and you've been talking about watermelons and seeds and, you know, things like that. It's like, you know, you don't even realize how the time flies, because it's a common, it's a shared interest. And I think that absolutely contributes to the, you know, the amount of time I think you have people in your lives. And the other thing I think of all the time is, you know, the kids that you grew up with. You know, I remember, you know, when the sun would go down on the block or whatever, and the kids would run out and play sometimes, you know, or just go to each other's basements and hang out. It was always, you know, like a gang almost, you know, the what was that? I guess that was the name of it, Our Gang. That was way back in the day with Spanky and Alfalfa. You know, it's kind of, you know, a bunch of kids just, you know, with nothing much in common other than, you know, we're growing up on the same block. We're from the same area. So, you know, I guess economically that puts our parents in the same bracket or whatever. Not that that makes a difference, because, you know, rich people, poor people, who the hell knows how that factors into crap. I don't know. I don't tend to think of things like that. I go more emotional, but obviously that influences things as well. But anyways, now I'm way off. I'm all over the map.
Yeah, no, but that's cool. And you said about kids, and it brought another reason that they might seem like a seasonal friend, and then it turns out that all that happened is, say, you had kids and they don't, and face it, life changes when you have children, and so do the things that you do, and maybe you're single and or couple without kids are still clubbing and whatnot, and you're home making dinner more nights than not. So it could be they weren't really fair-weathered, they just changed. And then you have those fair-weathered ones who, once they bleed you dry and they realize they can't get anything else from you, they disappear. So there's, God, you could talk all night about what changes friendships and the people in your life and how they...
It's very much environmental, and that's kind of why I started to mention the kids too, because you grow up in the same neighborhood, so you tend to go to the same schools. So, you know, maybe you got the same kind of career path, and, you know, one of your friends goes into art school and one of your friends goes into computer school, you know, and you take up these hobbies, and that's, I think, another thing that'll lead people to drift apart. You know, oh, you know, that this kid was on, you know, the football team, and, you know, I don't play football. So, well, then you never hung out in the same circles, so you drifted apart. You never even spoke to each other, even though you lived, like, right next door. You know, that's another phenomenon that I think tends to happen. But what I think is really funny is, you know, years down the road, you see them on the street, and you're like, isn't that so-and-so? And sometimes you even, you know, you bump into them and they recognize, you recognize each other. And again, that I think goes back to that other thing that I was saying, like, you know, some people are like, who are you? You know, I don't remember you. And some people are like, oh my God, it's really you. You know, it all depends on the impression, I guess, you made on each other. I know I was a bit of a class clown. I know my seventh grade English class will never forget me. I put my English teacher on the spot. She made up a word, and I called her out.
There's a lot of people that look the same their whole life. They just age some, and there's one that looked totally different when they go through puberty and then adult life hits them. And you're like, who are you? And then for me, the voice doesn't change as much as the appearance might. So hearing the voice might make a difference. Maybe not for a guy if his voice dropped. And you know, but there's so many factors.
Aren't you the girl that got caught selling pot under the bleachers? Yeah.
Could have been that, and she'd be like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
She's all prim and proper, or she'd be like, oh, yeah, man, that was me.
Yeah. I have no idea of which is that of which you speak. Club kids and all those other things. I don't know. Well, I guess it's a little early. We probably don't have any callers on the line, do we?
We don't have any callers, but we have like 4 sound clips and a few poems that need readers. So if you wanted to
okay.
do something like that.
The one that I dropped needs a reader, right? I don't have a sound clip.
Yeah, I didn't find a sound for that one.
Okay. Yeah, that was one of the newer ones.
You want me to read that one for you and kick off the show with it?
Yeah, you could do that. I don't need a ton of comments on that one. It's just, you know, it was an idea. PG-13, that there is one mention of the F-bomb, but other than that, it's...
Well, I might say damn or something instead, but I'm getting it now.
Yeah.
Okay, it's on the board, and this is called Life Would Suck Without You by Raconteur. And here we go. It's easier to give up and die than it is to struggle simply to live. Why expend any effort to get by when you have no more crap to give? Headed down that road, it's nearly impossible to look away under the weight of an unbearable load, suffocating by the end of the day. The soothing balm of your voice, describing the world through your eyes, helping me make my choice, exposing pain I cannot disguise. Your friendship has become a rudder, guiding me through the turbulent seas, inspiring me when my engine begins to sputter, reminding me I'm the only one I need to please. So I've adopted a selfish attitude rooted in my need to see you smile. In a shadow of gratitude, content to act the fool once in a while. End poem. Well, that's a really cool poem, Raconteur. The beginning, you know, it would be easier to give up. But sometimes it feels that way, and it's hard, but, you know, if you try to look around and tally some of the things that are good, it makes the bad and the depressing and the heartbreaking a teeny bit easier to swallow, at least. But I like the end. So I've adopted a selfish attitude rooted in my need to see you smile. That sentiment is like really, really sweet. And I think it was back a little further, the friendship becomes a rudder guiding me through turbulent seas. I really like that, too. I think that it's the truth, for one thing. I mean, a lot of times you can't see your way clear, and then you rely on a friend that helps things out for you, you know. And then you realize you were sinking, if not for them. But as far as an adopting a selfish attitude, for a minute I was waiting to say, you know, baloney, because I often say I'm going to put myself first for a change, but it's a lot easier to do for some people than others. And then when you said in my need to see you smile, it was just like, oh, okay, well, I can get behind that, because I have I call it need to please disease, and that's what it made me think of there. So, yeah, it's very cool. Great share. Worked well for tonight.
Thanks, Deb.
Yeah, you know, the idea of what it is, I think, that bonds some people together, and the way you tend to lean on each other, you always run away and conspire, or, you know, when something happens, you have to run to your friend and get that affirmation. It's like, am I crazy, or did she just do such and such, or did she just do that? And you got to hear them, you know, tell you, you know, no, I think you're right, or I see that too, you know, and you know, you end up discussing something that happened and kind of getting a better perspective on, you know, what it is you're looking at, and you feel better about, you know, I guess your own thought process sometimes. Sometimes you need to hear it out loud from someone else, or just hear yourself say it out loud and say, you know what, that sounds ridiculous, never mind. So no hatter, huh? It's early in California.
Well, not just that, but he's been dealing with some health stuff since he got back from Australia, and he hasn't been around a whole lot. I think actually last night he called the suites for a few minutes, and that's the most he's done since he got back.
Yeah, that's a beautiful example of friendship that, you know, he got to go from California to Australia to visit one of our founding members, our sponsor.
Yeah, it was awesome to think about the fact that he trucked on over to Oz and they got to meet each other in person. And he's got his little
I kind of picture myself like a little kid. I'd be poking him the whole time to see if he's real.
Right?
He is real.
Right.
Mr. A.P. Taylor. You can look him up on allpoetry.com, too. He's got a whole catalog of poems. Hatter usually has our opening song, so he's got a catalog of poems. You've got a catalog of poems. We've all got poems.
Yeah, it's one of the things that ties us together. when
I heard when.
When you first started writing poems and sharing the links and stuff, did you ever imagine that you'd be sitting around chatting with people from all over the world?
It's funny because, you know, I have been around. I've been writing since I was younger, so it wasn't that new of a thing. So I jumped in with both feet. I had a bit of a catalog when I first showed up even, so it wasn't that new to me. It's the feedback is what's new. And like you said, you know, the idea of people all over the world. You know, I tried very, very hard not to presume stuff, like, you know, some just based on the name, you know, I didn't think of, you know, oh, is it male or is it female or are they this or are they that? To me, it was just, you know, okay, this is just some person that's reading my words and you know, taking it however they take it. And, you know, I'm always curious about that. One of the songs growing up that I used to love, the refrain was, "Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood." And, you know, the idea behind, you know, well, I know what I'm trying to say, but I don't know what you're hearing. So that confuses a lot of people sometimes, you know. And I said that, and then they'll be like, "Well, no, you didn't." Well, that's what I was trying to say. Well, I didn't take it that way, and that turns into its own little world of arguments, you know, so.
Well, there's another good question. If someone misunderstands something that you say, is it your fault?
Well, there's some people that would say that. I had a teacher that actually felt that way. He wouldn't fail anybody. He's like, you know, I feel that if you're not able to do the work, it's my fault for not teaching you, not your fault for not learning. And that was his attitude. It was amazing. I never knew anyone that thought like that before. I never even considered that was an option. And then, you know, again, the fault, the funny thing about something like that, I go to humor a lot. So there's an expression that it's kind of a cop out, but you know, then people smart asses still tend to say it. Who's the pervert? The one that tells the dirty joke or the one that interprets it? Because, you know, a lot of times it's based on a double meaning or something, and it's like, you know, well, it was just, you know, a joke about such and such, and you're the one that took it that way, not me. and even though, you know full well what you were saying when you said it. So, yeah, it's like, you know, I think there's a, you know, it goes to the other thing that you had said earlier about getting to know people. It's like, oh, well, you don't talk like that around Deb, you know, or you don't talk like that around so-and-so, you know. Oh, yeah, her father's a minister. You don't talk like that around him, you know, that kind of stuff. It's you know, I guess gauging the temperature of the room and knowing what you're allowed to say or what you shouldn't say. And a lot of that gets lost, I think, now. You know, people, you know, like you say, you know, the dropping the F-bomb or whatnot, it's like, you know, crap gets the point across, so you don't have to go that far or say it. But, you know, there's times when you know, you got to pull the word out to make your point, I think. So, I don't know.
Oh, yes, I am definitely a proponent. I know when word is helpful, and I go for it. And as far as the dirty jokes and the interpretation, I ran a sensual show for over 3 years, so you know where my head goes.
Oh, my goodness. So, I guess that'll bring us to some poetry. Let's go. How many do we have tonight?
Like 7-ish, 8-ish, something like that. But Pee-wee's on the chat wall, so I put his link on the board, and he sent in a recording.
Yeah, I kind of want to get in more than two comments, but I guess we got to forge ahead. You know, definitely people will go back, hopefully, and play his link and leave comments, because he's got great production in what he does, so... I guess let's press play on Pee Wee.
A lot of people are tied up, especially as it gets warmer and warmer. The summer nights are often real slow, but judging by the replays on demands, they still listen to the show. It doesn't necessarily mean that they'll go looking for links and write down comments, but they listen to the shows, which is awesome. And I'll use the word listening later and not call in or anything. Thank you for doing that. And yeah, Pee Wee says no worries, Rack. Like he gets it. He's been around. The poets know.
Okay, cool.
So his link is on the board, and I am about to push play.
So this one, the Woods metaphor, it's kind of simple. It carries a metaphor.
It sounds like play.
Yes, it would help to push the right button. Sorry about that.
There's a rhythm here if you just may. Not so good. Was a day, much as any other day, become extraordinary, would. As I sit on the basement floor and prepare to surrender this range there when time was at hand, inject the first, second, in a warm, heavy, comfy fuzzy overdose either. Sliding slumber, slimy, gooey gel, everything fading in and out of sight. Except for walking in, I saw an angel. Then, as they say, I want the light. Mind you, it was an angel with wings, and even though you don't see them, pretty, real as the songs you sing, just to be near felt like heaven. To this point in life alone, given up, thought all else had, so why not? That moment, me being a chum, childhood friend, went and got notion to come and visit me. Just though everyone else gave up, there was still one who believed. And just one to believe for me. That's enough. 12 years ago, right now, I was most likely sprawled out on the floor. Xanax, Valium, Oxycontin, heroin, fentanyl, so many things more. That changed for me sometime. After my third, fourth OD, childhood friend of mine through life and time made her way back to me. Doesn't sound first sharing, but you really must see. When everyone is giving up, it only takes one. Let me clean up and do what I must. Tracy, you see, is an angel to me.
Wow, that was pretty cool. I don't know why my mind went to the old west for some reason. The gravelly prospector type with the maybe it was the guitar in the background just plinking away. And then just mention of friends and it made me think of call it a, I don't know, maybe it's the language he uses in some of his other works. Defending somebody's honor, I don't know. It's a little old-fashioned, but you know, he's talking about an angel and someone he grew up with. It's all very emotional and very much, you know, what tonight's about, you know, our interactions with people and how they waltz in and out of our lives. And sometimes they touch us deeply and, you know, whether or not their presence is there, it's still felt. I really appreciated it, Pee-wee. Thank you for sharing that tonight. What'd you think, Deb?
Well, I think that this is another really, really brave poem because it spells out a lot of things that he went through. And like, for one, towards the end, the last several stanzas, he was talking about how 12 years ago he would have most likely been locked down doing his drug of choice, and it would drive away people, you know, when it became more important than the people in your life, and it would get to the point where you didn't care about anything but that, and it wasn't really that you were being fair-weathered or that you were intentionally writing off or using and abusing people. It's just that it had you. It was like that ball and chain that you couldn't get past. And he fought and scraped. And you know, he said, it doesn't sound earth-shattering, but you really must concede when everyone has given up. It only takes one to believe. And it's like sometimes that's when you're sitting at rock bottom and you're reaching up and you just really need that one person to say, you can do this, come on. And then you start to believe it too. And you clean up and you do what you must. And that person that reached their hand out doesn't ever understand how big a deal it was to reach that hand out that day. This was a really, really potent write.
Yeah, you talk about someone being your cheerleader, you know. And what I find a little ironic too is sometimes, you know, accepting that hand is almost as hard as you know, it is for the person to reach it out, because you get mired in those feelings, and you just, you know, kind of don't want to be bothered. You don't think it's worth it, or you don't think you're worth it, or you come up with all kinds of excuses. It's like, you know, you're better off without me. You know, you don't give the person a chance. You know, and that can be really tragic in a lot of ways, because, you know, you talk about somebody believing in you. It's like, you know, if you care about somebody, then you should care about, you know, that their thoughts or their beliefs. So if they say they believe in you, to dismiss that is really kind of a horrible thing to me. You know, it's like when someone says, you know, they're not worthy of someone else or whatever, you know, it's like, you know, if she says she loves you, you know, can't you take that at face value? Why do you have to tear that down and question it? I'm making it into something way more than he was talking about, but, you know, I'm off the deep end. I'm sorry, Pee-wee. It was a beautiful piece, and that was a great comment, Deb. Thank you. I guess we can go down the list. Otherwise, we'll be behind the eight ball. I think eight poems is not that much, but anyway.
Well, it's not that much, but there's a, like when I do my show, it always feels rushed, and I am boom, 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 comment, let's get the next poem. But then that's what happens when there's 20 of them on the board versus having a handful but getting to actually have a conversation about it. And we need both. I mean, if every single show was just half conversation, maybe that would, you know, everybody wouldn't like listening to the conversation. Or if every show was just rushed through the poets, everybody wouldn't like that. So I think that there's a nice mix of talk and poems on many of the shows. And just saying, like some nights I'm like, I feel like I didn't give a particular poem enough. But when you get to the two-hour mark and you still have a half a dozen poems and you know, and then when I had a studio full of people, by the end of the show, people start to have to go, and then you still wind up just getting to give them a couple live comments. And, you know, there's not a lot we can do about trying to twist arms and having people actually write them, but
yeah,
having the ability to share the link with your friends so they can hear your poem and stuff like that, to me, makes it worth it, no matter which way that the shows go. And I say this to you all the time, but you have to get the gab, and it's just,
you know, I like that facet of this only because, you know, you're posting the poem, and you know, anyone can you know, wander by and read it. It's as the person that wrote it. It, to me, I like the idea of, you know, what thought did this spark in you? You know, what did you get from it? And it goes back to that other thing that you said earlier, you know, it's like who's at fault? Who you know, well, am I saying what I thought I was saying, or am I going off in a different direction? Did you take it? Did you see something different? You know, is there something else embedded in there that I didn't contemplate? Can you take it in a different direction? I love that aspect of it and that aspect of the conversation a little more than just, you know, oh, nice rhyme and meter, you know, great production value. I love the voice. it's like, you know, okay, tell me something concrete. Tell me something of substance. And sometimes I feel that way. Sometimes it's like, you know, it's just good to hear, you know, again, that affirmation of, you know, well, I'm glad you shared it. And I did appreciate this, that, or the other thing. So, anyway, it could go horribly wrong. It could go, you know, some people get attitudes about it. I don't know. I know nothing.
I was also thinking that it makes a big difference depending on the mood as well, because sometimes, like, you'll turn on the radio, for example, and you just want to block out the world and hear some really good songs and kick back, and that would be the time you click on the station and the radio guy's telling you everything under the sun except playing a song for you. And then there's other times where you're, speak for myself, I'm in a nosy mood and want to know what's going on, and then I want to hear them telling me stuff. So it we need a little of this and a little of that to I'm a Gemini. I'm a moody thing.
I don't know why I think of blues when I hear Gemini Dream, that song. Anyway.
Speaking of Gemini, I think Pee Wee too, so he understands.
Well, you're better than most. Everyone looks at me with, you know, like a dog cocking their head, like, well, what the hell was that? So I'm glad he understood me. How do you spell, because I've heard people say cousins, cousin, how do you spell his last name?
Well, the first time I looked at it, I said Pee Wee Cushion, like, you know, Chris, but it's C-U-S-O-N. And I think he told me I said it correctly. But I have noticed some say, sorry, I knocked something over. I have noticed that some say cussin, so, yeah.
Cusson?
Yeah, C-U-S-O-N.
Okay. Sorry, Pee-wee, I can't see, and I think that's, you know, a particular slight when you get someone's name wrong. It's like, you know, I want to get your name right. And then there's the other thing, you know, having heard, you know, heard him, it's like, you know, Pee-wee's a guy, and then you sit there dancing around the gender neutral because there's no audio. It's like, I don't know if it's a guy or a girl, but I don't want to assume. But, you know, we know Pee-wee's a dude, so.
Right. Well, there's been a few where I have said he or she and had it wrong. I mean,
I knew someone that was very particular about not being gender specific when they chose their screen name. You know, they, because they were like, you know, well, it doesn't really matter anyway, and you know. It was kind of a cool thought because, you, like some people are like, you know, poet, and they're like, well, poet is, but you know, a poet still, you know, is gender neutral to me, so it doesn't matter. You don't have to say poetess, you know. So it's like a poet. But you know, some people are like, you know, well, she's a poetess. I'm like, okay, I don't get the distinction. It's like she's a poet.
Well, anyway. And there's others also that do it because then. For example, when I first started writing the sensual poetry, it's because I like sensual poetry and I love writing it, but it doesn't mean that I'm advertising. It's not like my Match.com bio. I'm not looking for dates. I'm a poet. And so they use the name. So, you know, it deters a little from inbox messages of suggestive things and stuff because they're not sure. And let me tell you,
I get very prickly about something like that because, you know, you there's literary devices. You don't necessarily write first person. You could be writing from somebody else's perspective. You could be writing from somebody else's experience or something that you know, is different. Just because you're a woman, a woman married or single or whatever, you know, they can't read that into your writing. It may influence it a little bit, but, you know, unless you're intentionally, you know, using elements of that in your writing, it's irrelevant. It's like, well, you don't need to know that. It's just, you know, this is, I'm writing to you about butterflies, you know, there's no marriage and butterflies, so it doesn't matter, you know. It's like, anyway.
Right. Well, on the other end of the spectrum there, when I started doing the shows and whatnot, I can't.
I heard can't, and then you cut out.
Oh, I said I can't even tell you the expressive photos.
Oh.
there's stuff that's been put in my, it's, So, like, yeah, I can understand some people not being gender specific, because then maybe they won't get some of those playgirl bunny.
Yeah.
And speaking of Mr. A.P. Taylor, he is all in your studio.
Welcome, A.P.
Hi, Rack. How are you?
I'm doing okay.
Excellent.
How's the weather over there?
Cold. Not wet, but cold. So
cold.
I'm sitting at about, I don't know, 48, something like that. Cold.
Yeah, we was like 90-something today in Jersey.
I heard that. And we're like so far away from that, I can't begin to tell you. We haven't seen the 90s for 3-4 months.
Yeah, well, I was saying earlier that it was in the 40s at nighttime over the last few days, and here we are in the 90s during the day. But, you know, I'm just realizing that sounded bad when I said speaking of A.P. Taylor part was about him saying we were sponsored by the A.P. Taylor Foundation and him saying how awesome you were for bringing Hatter to Oz. Then we switched topics to people sending naughty pictures in your inbox, people that don't even know. So I don't want people to misunderstand what we just said when we introduced you. I am not saying that A.P. Taylor sends naughty pictures in my inbox. I don't know the people who do it.
Oh, my goodness.
Steamboats and butterflies and beautiful paintings, not pictures of your nether region.
No.
It gives down under a whole new meaning.
No, I'm sitting here looking at another picture.
I said it, but it sounded like I was introducing you as one of the people.
Anyway.
All clear.
I can read that.
I imagine you'd like to get your poem up on the board. You're usually time pressed.
Usually, I can hang around for a bit today, Rack, so I'll leave it in your hands
as
to what you want to do.
I'd like to be selfish with your time and hang on to you, if possible.
Okay.
But, you know, you got to do what you got to do. So, I don't want to be rude either.
Saturday morning here, Rack. So, I've got work to do this weekend, but I'm not time pressed like I normally am on a, you know, because it's, you know, a business day or something like that. So it's a Saturday morning here. So.
Yeah, you're a couple hours. You're like calling from the future, right? It's a day ahead for you.
Coming around to 11 o'clock on Saturday morning here.
I'm so used to, like, when you hang up saying goodbye or you know, have a good night, and it's like, you know, well, it's afternoon.
Wait
a minute.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Did you just say it's coming up on 10 o'clock there?
11. 10 minutes to 11.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, did we change clocks again? All right. Sorry about that.
No.
Although
we do. Yeah.
Okay.
The changing of clocks thing is incredibly annoying, Deb, because it's, you know, we have daylight saving time in different places and ways and means, and then there's also changes in the U.S. in terms
of at least my board's differences in time, and I thought maybe I missed one of the, like, we did the fallback. So we're good. Okay, it is what time I thought it was there. And before you dive into the next poem, let's say hello to Sky, Sky, Sky.
Hello.
Miss Sky, how are you?
I made it. Sorry. I was at a painting class. I just got home, but I am here.
Yay.
Well done,
you. So what are you painting houses?
I'm sorry?
You're painting houses?
Yeah. I mean, it's not going to help you much, but I could put what I painted on the board, you know.
I keep hearing Bob Ross going, happy trees.
I actually said that today because there is a tree. I
love that.
It's funny that you mentioned that because I just told AP he should check out some of his videos. He's amazing.
He mentioned that you're the one that directed him to give it a go.
It's not signed yet, but there it is.
That's awesome. Wow.
That's good.
Absolutely gorgeous. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did you need to read and run, Sky, or can you hang out a bit?
No, I'm here for the rest of the show. I have a poem for you, but you have to give me just a moment to gather myself. But I'm sticking around, so no rush.
Awesome.
Cool. Okay. I put Titus's link underneath Sky's amazing art there, and I will push play and. Just a moment. There it is. Okay, here we go.
This love of God through you. Ardent whispers alone, it could be said, would breathe from God that I was led, believing you were He. That you, my love, are praised sincerely, raised from above. Through you I have been given this gift, from him that others are involved to lift the many hearts I thought who ought to mention that are so dignified and true. 'Tis honesty that would reflect the heart, creating a soul worthy estimate in part for the sake of God alone that we share with him touching moments in prayer. The ease in which all sentiment can lean, your love becomes a splendid mezzanine, these written words are his by choice. Supernal sky, the stage for love's rejoice. It's without notice that the highest climb, freedom, faith, my place this meantime speaks the melody of love and free will, to write when asked, my soul it does fulfill.
that was gorgeous, Titus, as usual. I like that idea. You know, when you love someone, obviously, that to me speaks to, you know, being around for, you always want them around for a long time, and they're inspirational and everything else, and you kind of lean on them. It's beautiful thoughts, as told as only you can. I don't know if it's new with the music in the background, or you've done that before. Leave me alone. I'm sorry. I'm being stupid. Anyway, I enjoyed the piece, and I'm getting lost now. I'm tripping over myself. Save me, Sky.
I will try. This is beautiful, and yes, beautiful overplay in the background, and it was low, which is really exciting. It's really important, I think, when you're putting music on that it doesn't overpower the words, especially on your shows, you know, because you want to hear the poem. I loved the use of course, building, which has his honesty that would reflect the heart, creating the soul-worthy estimate in part. Beautiful rhythm, beautiful rhyme, of course, and meter that he has in here. And I like the... well, of course, the language, but also the sentiments behind. And Yeah, and ardent whispers. I don't think ardent gets used enough. Beautiful language, like I said. Really well done.
Thank you, Sky. Yeah. AP, can you comment for Titus?
Hey. I know that sounds strange, but they are. There's sort of this sense of something felt very carefully and cautiously, and it's like he was tiptoeing through the words. It was really interesting. That lovely sort of almost words by the way.
Hey, P, are you on your speaker by chance?
Is he breaking up for you, Deb?
Yeah, I was going to ask if he was breaking up for anybody
I'll
else.
Get off the speaker. Is that better?
Much.
Thank you.
Okay, cool.
Thank you, AP. Deb, can you comment for Titus?
Yeah, for starters, I wanted to say that his prompt for this was John 15:12, which is love one another as I have loved you. And he dedicated this poem to his wife, Maureen, for him becoming a poet. And I thought that was really, really sweet, that you know. Although he has many, many poems that he dedicates to her. And, you know, when we think about some of the poems that he writes, you know, he's got such an amazing vocabulary. And then we listen to him reading. But the first thing that comes to mind isn't the romance for many, but for me, I see him pouring it into these poems over and over again, especially when they're tied to his wife. And I like the parts like, "'Tis honesty that would reflect the heart, creating a soul worthy estimate in part for the sake of God alone that we share with him, touching moments in prayer." And it's when he's releasing that softer side of himself that is oozing from here. It's without notice that the highest climb, freedom, faith, my place, this meantime. It's just, and then his pronunciations of the words too add to it. So between the music that he chooses for his background and the sentiment that he pours into it and the genuine, deep, abiding love that he has for the woman shows, and that's impressive. Another great share, another piece of romance for his lovely, lovely bride.
It's definitely the foundation for the lifetime portion of being together, I think, the theme for tonight. So I thought it was lovely, Titus, and thank you, Deb, for your comment. What do you want to go next? What do we got? We got SoundClouds. We got how many needs of readers?
Let's see. I did yours, Pee-wee. Those two are recordings. I'm not sure if Sweet will or will not call. We have a poem by Lockdown Lark that needs a reader. And then it depends on whether Sweet is able to call as to whether she needs a reader or not.
Okay.
And then aside from that, we have Kay's recording, and we have Bill the Poet's recording, and we have A.P. Taylor's poem, and whatever Ms. Sky brought with her.
Well, let's go with Kay and then AP.
Okay. Let me grab Kay's link. Okay, the Kay's link is on the board, and I am on my way to push play in the studio. And here we go.
So this one, though it's metaphor, it's kind of simple. It carries a metaphor of nature, the people that have left me through death, but I carry them, as they will always hold a place in my heart. And I call this Jigsaws in Creation, What Was Lost is Found. Beach boardwalk bluebirds and crescent rolls of rippling water reflecting through the sun, while seagulls chirp, the sound of the waves and sluice and foaming caps of white branch their echoes to land. Shoes step in hymns as buttons and dappled light through greenery nestled safely are the flowers of prayer. Winds glide, fences homestead into landscaping, sublime from water to land, or the balm to soothe. End poem.
Wow. You know, she mentions nature in the beginning and jigsaws. That kind of, to me, hits all the notes on what she was talking about in her piece. And you know, the idea of how they fit together, I think, is beautiful too, because that's what I guess ties to the underpinnings of, you know, season, reason, and everything else, because, you know, so all those things go back to, you know, I guess why or how things tend to fade in and out, you know, kind of like the ebbing of the tides. And I think it was beautiful to tie that into nature the way that she did. You know, it's a lovely metaphor and a great way to talk about your relationships. What'd you think, Deb?
Yeah, well, for one, I really like the title Jigsaws in Creation, What Was Lost is Found. There's something I really, really like about that, because the jigsaw, you would think about the pieces maybe scattered, wait to get put back together, and then quite often you put it together and there's one piece missing, and that's what I got with that lost piece found in the title. Just the title, my. And the second stanza, actually, I think, yeah, you know what? It's just a couple long ones. So I think this is Kay showing off just a little, because it's looking like a 4-line 10 here, just saying. But the second line, it is, while seagulls chirp, the sound of the waves is sluicing foaming caps of white, branch their echoes to land, and the visuals there of the foam and the waves crashing on the shore and spreading out, the sound of it is soothing, like some of the voices that we are surrounded by, and the sound of the seagulls pulls in the nature, and it's just the visual, like I said, of the thought, the comforting thought there. Sometimes you can just take a big, deep breath, and when you let it out, it just feels like you found that what was missing. It just makes everything better to hear those seagulls sing and the water crashing. And in the last stanza there, winds glide, fences, homesteading to landscaping, sublime from water to land, or the balm to soothe. And again, it makes me think of that there's something that happens when you sit there and you can just close your eyes and listen to the water crashing, and it just makes you feel better. Sublime is a good word there, from water to land, where the balm to soothe. And sometimes that balm to soothe comes from friendships. Sometimes it comes from relationships. So I think that it's a gorgeous poem.
Yeah, she did a fantastic job with it, and the fact that she chose the seagull too, it is kind of chirping at me a little bit too, because there's a little bit that you could read into that, at least me anyway, because I'm out of my mind. Sky, can you comment for Kay?
I thought it was a gorgeous piece, and I loved, I mean, there were so many things I loved about it, and it was so short, but yes, I just love every line. But the shoe step of hymns as buttons and dappled light through greenery nestled safely.
on the flower of the prayer. I really loved that one. I thought it was so gorgeous and weighty. And the idea of shoes stepping up hymns, I just really liked that. And, of course, I think, you know, when someone writes something like this, they're most likely thinking of a specific person. And, of course, when the reader is reading it, because it's so gorgeous and because the feeling and emotion, I think we ourselves as readers can think of people that might influence us in this way as well, which I think is giving to the poem and to the readers, poets themselves. So really well done.
Thank you, Sky. And AP?
Yeah, it's a really elegantly constructed piece. I love the imagery of the words, and I love how that blends with the images that she's placed in the in the poem itself, and the two sort of speak to each other. It's just that brings that beautiful sense of calm and peace and spirit of place, and it's really beautiful.
It fits well together, like a jigsaw.
Very, very well. Yeah, very, very well. So,
it's a beautiful piece, Kay. Thank you, and thank you, AP. You can drop your link, or we can drop your link, or someone can drop a link.
Yay!
I put it on the chat wall already, and I just happened to notice that if Hatter was here, he would say, oh, he brought one of those evil poems.
Oh, no.
It is. Well, it's long dead. This is Our Vows of Connection, a Word Palindrome, and you can see the length of this. So anyway, let's see how we go. Goes a little bit like this. Trees within tangle friends unfurl towards skies. Seas will those spaces, morning new opens, wearing disguise. Friends call branches, which upon drift winds of shadows, bends time as passing sands, their presence and season froze. Leaves adorn through conversation, is in words scatter, weave sunlight, grown buds created within patter. Roots deep, sustaining canopy, the growth here, high above. Shoots begin here, principles, decisions, to anchor love. Love anchor to decisions, principles here begin shoots. Above high here growth, the canopy sustaining deep roots. Patter within created buds grown, sunlight weaves. Scatter words in conversations, though adorn leaves. Prose season in presence, their sands passing as time bends. Shadow of winds drift upon which branches call friends. The skies wearing opens new morning, spaces they will seize. Skies towards unfurl, friends tangle within trees. End poem.
Wow. You know, to bring a palindrome to something, that, you know, you're talking about relationships and the passing of time and whatnot, you know, in itself, I guess I'll steal Hatter's word and say evil, but, you know, maybe brilliant would be a more polite way to say it. But, you know, I kind of want to tweak you a little and say evil. So, wow. And that always fascinates me, you know, that the forwards and backwards, you know, when I construct something, it's somewhat deliberate, and I almost wonder about, you know, how you can manage to do that with a palindrome, because the idea of going backwards and forwards is just, I don't know, daunting. Obviously, it's not impossible, and you know, there you are. This is beautiful, though. I like how, you know, I like the way that you can do that backwards and forwards, and you know, get that meaning. Anyways. Deb, can you comment for AP?
Absolutely. Well, for one thing, Mac, I have to tell you that he essentially just poetically said all the things we said at the beginning of the show. For example, in the one line, bend time as passing sands, their present and seasons froze. And that, to me, spoke of, like earlier we were saying, that sometimes one person will grow beyond where the other person is just, you know, the same as they have been, like frozen there in that time frame. Or maybe even disinterested. But another part there leaves a door through conversations and words scatter. Sometimes, I believe we mentioned earlier that sometimes you can go without seeing someone and then pick up right where you left off, and it's just a comfortable conversation. And others, it's like there's a very uncomfortable silence. And like the weave sunlight, grow buds, create it within patter, ways that we connect and make things better for one another. And down towards the, like the last stanza, sometimes it amazes me the difference in something that you'll write, AP, where it takes on a different meaning backwards. And sometimes he does it purely accidental. He'll come in and he'll read a poem that's not an evil palindrome, but yet I'll read it backwards for some reason and say, well, I like it even better backwards. So it's like one of my favorite things, show off. But like I said, that last stanza there, froze season in presence, their sands passing as time bends. And it's just they're off. They're you know, they've drifted. Shadows of winds drift upon which branches call friends. And sometimes things happen and you get really that much closer and you bond. And sometimes, for lack of a better way to put it, the wind rips the branch off the tree and blows it down the street, and that person doesn't even, or that branch can't get back to the tree, type of thing. Disguise wearing opens new morning spaces. They will seize skies toward unfurl, friends tangle within trees. I like the idea of friends tangle within trees, because sometimes that tangling gives strength to each. Just like a
poet,
you know, somebody who makes you feel better about yourself instead of so. Like a lot, like I said, as he was reading, a lot of the conversation we had at the beginning of the show about what changes friendships and everything from the ones who show up, hang out, get what they can get, and then leave, and the ones that stay through no matter what. There's a whole lot in this. And I'm going on and on. Great poem.
Thanks, Steve. And Sky.
I thought it was an excellent piece. And I love trees. So right at the very beginning, when you implement this metaphor of trees within tangle, friends unfurl towards skies, the idea of all these little tiny branches, and how true is that, you know? You're sprouting out through life, and all these little branches, and sometimes, and when you think about even further, when you think about those leaves, not everyone stays or I guess, comes back, and I really liked that, you know, friends call branches, which upon drift winds of shadows. I love that. Bends the time passing sends, because there are the ones that will keep with you through that bend, and then ones that, you know, that break off. And so the whole metaphor of it I thought was absolutely brilliant as well. It's written. And then when you talk about the seasons and you talk about time and the passage of time, throughout our lives, you know, it's very rare that you have the same friends from when you were younger all the way through. I mean, there are those few that stick. But, you know, for me, you know, I've had my best friend for over 24 years. And I know how lucky I am, and this poem just reminds me of that not everybody has what I might have, and it makes me very appreciative just reading it, and I think too, it was a wonderful poem to instill those kind of emotions and think about that. And like I said, the metaphor for me was one of the best parts. Really well. Yeah. And comment.
Yeah. Yes. Jessica, I was kind of waiting to jump in a little bit too when you're talking about the branches and relationships and whatnot. Sometimes a relationship is described as an entanglement. Usually I hear romantic entanglement, but you know that was you know, like you said, that was a brilliant offshoot of what he chose, the way he chose to express himself, which you know he does quite often. That's just why I like he writes. He seems to favor a lot of the palindromes, the double entendres like I do, but yeah, it lends itself to his metaphors beautifully. Thank you, AP.
Thanks, Rack. I'm very lucky, Rack, because for whatever reason, I seem to have these very long standing relationships with friends, and so you know, I've got four good friends that I talk to regularly that I've been friends with for 36 years.
That's awesome.
I've been with my GP, my doctor, for over 30 years. I've got these ridiculously long sort of relationships with people. And that probably says something about them as much as it says something about me. But for me, that's why I sort of think of trees with relationships, because it's a sort of subtlety to it. And I sort of liked the palindrome form because it sort of says one thing at the front, but it's sort of slightly different in the reverse. It's sort of a little more stirring. And I always like palindromes that have a slightly different feel on the reverse, and that's what this does, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, it reminds me of the passing of time too. Yeah, it's again lends itself wonderfully to the thought process of and the creativity of constructing something like this. It makes it really complex and you know, adds to the layers, makes people want to stare into your brain, I think. Well, you know, the Deb and everyone else keep teasing you, you know, just showing off. So.
Yeah, that's right.
Did you wrap up your piece, Sky?
Yeah, I picked an odd piece, but I'll explain why I picked it. It just kind of felt like it was in the, just felt like doing this one.
Okay.
Am I up next? Is that what that means?
If you like, unless you want to wait a little longer.
No, it's okay. I'll go. I picked this one because when you talk about the seasons of life and people that come in and out of your life, I don't know why I was looking through my poems and trying to figure out which one I'm going to pick, and then I came across this one and I thought, you know, this one person that you know, died when I was 2.5 has affected so many lives beyond her lifetime. So even the grandchildren, well, the great-grandchildren, really, that she never met, and still has affected their lives. So I thought this was appropriate because it's kind of funny, the duality of sometimes the people that don't, you talk about brief meeting, but people that you actually don't even remember meeting have influenced you greatly, which she has for me, anyway. So this is called... And it's from the perspective of a bear. So just keep that in mind. I'm just going to tell you that so you can't see the picture, but it's from the perspective of a bear. Little black button eyes. I saw the sadness stretched across her half-moon smile, the one she greeted strangers with as she ghost-walked through aisles. And as if her heart sank to the sole of her shoe, I could hear each somber thud as it shattered her world blue.
When she paused, I saw a tuft of rough brown fur. She saw my tuft of rough brown fur, my sewn-on smile and little black button eyes. I like to think I remember just a hint of bright in those dark green clouded skies. She stayed quiet down hospital hall until the room where her mother lay. She tucked me in close as I looked up with my little black button eyes. She only stole a quick glance, for hers were fixed with such a wonderful, loving kind of pride. The woman was very kind, always held her rosary and a prayer. She must have been very special because her daughter was always there. Then came a day I shall not soon forget, the day my little black button eye learned of death. There they were, just the two, and as my little stuffed heart broke, I didn't know what to do. She took me home to three very small and teary faces. She said my name was Mimir, and whenever they missed that sweet older woman, they held me close and hope to bear. I watched them grow, often tucked beside them. If they woke up scared, they looked into my little black button eye and say, I love you, Mimir. With just one blink, they were grown and then had children of their own. They call the daughter, who reminds me so much of the older woman now, Mimir too. And wouldn't you know it, I'm a grand. I listen to the same old stories told once more. And when the new little ones wake up scared, I'm tucked beside them, and she tells them, you don't have to be afraid when Grand Mimir is here. And with these little black button eyes, I've loved four generations. And think how special was I to be named after that sweet woman who I learned would never truly die. And poem.
Wow. That's kind of amazing. I love that you did it from the perspective of the bear. That's a brilliant take on it, and a lovely way to carry it through the generations. And you know, those literary questions. You know, how would you know that? Or they weren't there to see that. Or it's wonderful. And you know, you even without seeing the picture, you know, just the mention of the black button eyes. You know, there's that old fashioned teddy bear that you know you see. Or at least from my generation that I've seen, that you definitely conjure up that image, even though you know, I can't see the picture myself. And the idea of the sentiment being infused in the object itself, you know, carried through. Again, you know, that's just a brilliant manifestation of emotion. It makes it so relatable and so just warm and comforting, but you know, heart-wrenching at the same time. It's just lovely, absolutely beautiful. Thank you,
Rack. My mother got the bear in the hospital when she was visiting my grandmother, and she still has the bear, and so this was a very much a true story. But the picture on this thing is a picture of the bear, but it looks like it when it was newer. It's gotten a little worn and restuffed over the years, but thank you so much.
I can easily picture, because my I'm playing the same game with my mother. My grandmother had a teddy bear that my mother has, and when I go to visit, she's always looking for it, because I keep telling her I'm taking it home with me. No, you're not. But you know, it's got to be, you know, close to 100 years old. Yeah, it's beautiful and relatable. Thank you, Sky. Deb, can you comment for Sky?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Sky, you might have already answered this, but is that an actual picture of the teddy bear?
No,
or
no. I have to steal one next time I go to my mom's. I just haven't done that. But that looks a lot like it. It looks a lot like it, but it is not. I'm gonna have to get my mom to let me take a picture.
Okay. Well, at least you solved my nosiness. But no, the tenderness that it inspired the poem. I saw the sadness stretched across the half moon smile, the one she greeted strangers with, as she ghost walked through aisles. And that, I almost want to cry, that puts me in mind of my maternal grandmother at the end, because she would be, she would almost be smiling, but she would also be really sad, because like she was starting to not recognize people and stuff like that. It's just, and as if her heart sank to the sole of her shoe, and I, that feeling where it, where she would feel confused and lost, hit me in those four couplets there. In those dark green clouded skies, she stayed quiet down hospital halls until the room where her mother lay. And in a reversal there, it was where my mother laid the last day of the cancer. And there was just this sad, overwhelming, defeated feeling. And you would try to perk up a little for them as you walk through the door, but just the sight of them can be really mind-numbing, heartbreaking. I can't. There's not enough sadness to explain the person who patched up your wounds and put baking soda on your bee stings and stuff, laying there, and you can't put any on her bee stings, you know. Then came a day I shall not soon forget, the day my little black button eyes learned of death, and it's a really, really hard thing. Oh, there was one part I wanted to point out, but now I got myself all twisted here. You don't have to be afraid. With Gran here, and with these little black button eyes, I've loved for generations. There's just so much love and sentiment tied to the memories that these black button eyes might have seen over those years, and the original reason to have that snuggle, and the final reason to have that snuggle. I'm probably not making any sense, but your poem's awesome.
No, I'm sorry, Rex.
No, I was going to say she's definitely making sense. I was going to point out, you know, you snuck in the idea of being a mama bear in there. Because that protectiveness, that safety.
Well, when my parents died, my mom came home with the bear from the hospital, and we called it Mimir from then on. And I was very young, so I don't remember. But I remember through the years, you know, we had our rocking chair, and my mom would rock us in my grandmother's rocking chair with the bear and tell stories and sing to us. So for someone who died when I was very young, that I don't even remember them. They were very prominent through my mother's story, her poetry, her writing, and so much more, and through my aunt's stories also, and through so many things. So definitely, yeah.
Brilliant. And AP, would you like to comment this way?
Yeah, look, I love the bear. My great grandmother died before I was one, but she did buy me my teddy bear for Christmas, which I still have after all of these years. And there's something special about bears. They get so well loved, and they have a very distinctive sort of position, I think. I don't know why, but they do. And so my teddy bear is very well loved, and this teddy bear in the picture looks very well loved, and it just has that beautiful sense of memory and history. And
in the sort of same way, having it tied to the memory of a person makes that person sort of live on, and there's something very special about that, and I think you pick it up beautifully in the poem.
Thank you, AP.
Beautiful piece. Thank you, Sky. Alrighty.
You have three left. One has a recording. One is locked down, needing a reader. And one is Sweets, and I just texted her to see if she thought she'd be calling in the next 25 minutes before your show ends. She hasn't responded yet.
Let's just fill the poet.
Grabbing it now. Okay, I added Phil's poem right under the painting of AP's teddy bear. And if you click on that, I will push play.
There's a poem by Phil the Poet called Memories of My Dad. When we were young, my dad taught us right from wrong, how to stand up to bullies and how to be strong. Showed us his skills at football and playing the guitar. Read us bedtime stories underneath the crazy stars. Showed us how to respect mum when he was away. Always had treats for us after a hard working day. Made us laugh and groan with every joke he did tell. Tried to put on a brave face when he was not even well. He thought of others more than he did himself. I smile as I look at a photo of both of us on the shelf, remembering how kind he was to my wife in a foreign land, who would often turn to me and say, "You're a lucky man." This is just a memory of how I saw my dad back then. I pause as tears start to fall before I begin again, then laugh at the way he would embarrass us with a dad dance. Always had a glint in his eyes, which was not there by chance. It was April 2005 when he passed away, aged 67. I wish I could repay all the love and kindness he had given. It is so true about the saying from that old song, "You don't know what you have got until it is gone." End poem.
Wow. That's amazing, Phil. Oh, you touch on so many emotions. And I couldn't help but smile throughout when you're describing, like, the dad. I think you said dad dance. Oh, my God. Yeah, this is a very relatable piece. And a wonderful tribute, and you know, I like that you look at it like a memory also, because, you know, to me, you know, there's a lot of people in our memories. You know, you can remember, you know, the first time you rode a bike or the first time you tried something, but, you know, the memories of people, I think, are the ones that are very, very special. And, you know, the emotions that are attached to this are just incredibly heart-wrenching. You know, I could feel you missing your dad and everything. You know, it feels like you guys were close, you know, and sometimes looking back, you know, you remember the things and you wish you said more. And I think that's what makes some of these things so bittersweet. When you think back on, you know, what you had, and it makes you appreciate it that much more. You know, there's that empty space now that it's gone that can never really be filled. And it's that hollow ache, I think, that just, you know, reminds you of, you know, that moment of happiness. Even though it hurts, you got to smile. This is beautiful. Beautiful piece, Phil. Thank you. Can you comment, Scott?
Yeah, I thought this was a gorgeous piece. And, you know, Phil always brings it when he writes, I think. And I love that he always takes the time to do the recordings to read it himself. I think there's so much in this that it is so powerful. And, you know, when we were young, my dad taught us right from wrong. Think about the foundation that parents, you know, give us, you know, hopefully give us. And you think of all the things that you respect about them, that they taught you, that they built. And then that is a forever thing, you know. And I can see that Phil counts himself very lucky to have such a prominent figure in his life. And you can see that through the poem. And then what a profound loss it must have been. With that bittersweet, you know, that it will, I'm lucky to have had it. But I still miss it, and I still mourn when it's gone. Definitely a wonderful piece to share. Thank you, Phil.
Great comments. I like that you mentioned the things that, you know, that the foundation that they lay, because it's not always a positive thing. You know, some people grow up in abusive situations and they see, you know, bad examples of their parents, and this is a beautiful memory. Beautiful observation, Sky. Thank you. AP, can you comment for Phil?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because you sort of, I think you view your parents very differently after you've become a parent yourself. You sort of reflect upon all the things that sort of just happened in the background and places you went and holidays you did and time you spent together, and you just think, you know, that sort of just happened when you were young and you just sort of expected it. But those things never did. They were always choices. There were always other things that people could be doing, and they chose to spend that time because they thought it was important, and how they spent that time was significant as well. And so I love the emotion in this. I love the fact that he's remembering in such a positive way and a constructive way what his father did. And I think, you know, they often say, you know, you can't be an adult until you've forgiven your parents, and so many people seem to have trouble with that. But Phil's not one of them. He's written a beautiful poem.
Thank you, AP. And Deb, you get the final comment.
I think that Phil captured the nostalgia, the love, the loss, the memories, with an overwhelming amount of emotion that we couldn't help but feel it with him as he went on. He thought of others more than he did himself, and I smile as I look at a photo of both of us on the shelf. Some of the things that I think AP just touched on, it, that some of the things that you don't realize until you grow and you're a parent too, the things that you might have even got mad about how it was handled, and then you think, okay, well, now it makes perfect sense because, like, I would do the same. I have done the same many things that my parents did that at the time bratty me, spoiled little biatch would think, you know, how dare they? And then I turn around and do the same thing. It's because you live and learn, and your perspective changes, and you realize how lucky you are. Like, you know, instead of taking stuff for granted, like family trips, you start to realize that, you know, it's not an easy task to do that year after year, come up with money and you know, make such a wonderful life for people or do things for people, and all those things come rushing back. And I especially like the way you tied it up at the end, though, and brought it all back to you don't know what you have till it's gone, because then sometimes even if you didn't mean to, you took a lot of things for granted, and even though your head knew they wouldn't always be there, your heart didn't admit that, and you realize more once they're gone that they were everything. I mean, I remember when my mom died first, and I remember that everything was different, birthdays, Christmases, and it wasn't about the gifts, it was about the bond, the memories, the love, the world changes when your parents are both gone, even more, you know. So, and then all the memories become the priceless trinkets that you hope to never forget. So I think that he did a beautiful job here of sharing his emotion. And dedicating these words to his father. Great share.
Yeah, I mean the idea of you know, you don't know what you got till it's gone. For me, there's a physical absence that's different from the way that when someone touches you, that'll always remain with you. You know, there's nothing new. You can't add to it, but you know, or build upon it. But you know, to me, the way that's what it means when someone touches you is that's never gone. You know, that laugh or that thought, that thing that you learned about. You know, this is, you know, you respect your mother or you behave. That's not how you do it. You know, that stays with you. And I think. You know, that's the flip side of what you know he's talking about. It's not just the physical loss. You know, once it's gone and you can't build upon it or add to it, that you realize, you know, what it is that you actually have, what a treasure it really is. That was absolutely beautiful, Phil. Thank you. So I think you said Sweet was the only one left?
Actually, I have Lockdown, Larks, and Sweet. Lockdown on the board. I thought maybe we could get AP to read, and then I just asked Sky to take a look at Sweet Peas just in case she doesn't call, because there's only 16 minutes left now. That's about enough for the two poems. So if AP wouldn't mind reading for Lockdown.
Oh, good. I'm just accessing the poem as we speak. This is Always in My Heart by Lockdown Lars, and it goes a little bit like this. The first time was when she sang to me, and I saw the skies in her eyes, and I knew then love was my destiny, following a sun always on the rise. It was in my early morn I first could hear her heartbeat. To me her love was already sworn as I gazed on this smile so sweet. The first time was when she sang to me, and I saw the skies in her eyes, and I knew then love was my destiny, following a sun that never cries. In her warmth I grew stronger, and she taught me how to care, and I knew as the day grew longer, her inner strength would help me share. The first time was when she sang to me, and I saw the skies in her eyes, and I knew then love was my destiny, following a sun that never lies. Days are followed by a twilight zone, so it must be we would have to part. Whilst she's gone, I am not alone, as she is always in my heart. The first time was when she sang to me, and I saw the skies in her eyes, and I knew then love was my destiny, following a sun that never dies. End poem.
That was a great read, AP, and I love that sentiment. It's kind of like what I was just saying about, you know, once something touches you, it's really always there, even though, you know, physically it might be gone. But wow, always in my heart. I don't know. people tend to give away a lot of pieces of their heart. Love is a tricky thing when you talk about something like that. But you know, it is something that stays with you. And it reminds me a little of Titus's piece also. He's talking about the repetition of saying, you know, seeing the skies in her eyes. You know, his affection for her is overwhelming and equally emotional. It's beautiful and affectionate and very, very moving piece. Lars, thank you. AP, you read it. What'd you think?
Yeah, it's really sweet, isn't it? It's got a beautiful rhyme signature to read and a lovely assonance. And so it just sort of floats its way down the page, which is really nice. And I didn't even realise it was sort of rhyming until I hadn't looked at it before I picked it up. And it's really easy to just get into the reading of the poem, and I love that with a poem. I love that if you can just sort of pick it up and all of a sudden, you know, it just sort of speaks to you and the rhythm speaks to you. And if that happens, you tend just to be able to read it really easily. And I was this, said just a really, really well-written poem. It really was.
Thanks, AP. Sky, can you comment for Lars?
Yes, I thought this was very lyrical. I still think it could easily be turned into like lyrics into a song. It was very beautiful in that way. One of my favorite sections is in her warm figure stronger, she taught me how to take care, and I knew as the day grew longer, her inner strength would help share. And I think it's so important to surround ourselves with that strengthen us, that make us not just either become, you know, sedate and who we are, but maybe even perhaps regress. Because as human beings, we should always keep growing. And when you can find somebody who can do that with you and love you through those changes and lift you up to where you, you know, would like to be and or strive to be, I think it is a beautiful thing. And that here, so really well done.
Awesome comments, Sky. Thank you. Deb.
Yeah, I my impression was also that it was very, very melodic, tomato, tomato. The repeat stanza the first time when she sang to me and I saw the skies in her eyes and I knew then love was my destiny. Following a son that never cries, and it is. It sounds like an incredible chorus to a great song, and I was also noticing that he won a bronze award and that he has it listed under Lark's lyrics. So I'm sure he'll be thrilled to know that it read like a song. It was excellent, and then you mentioned Rat. That it was a beautiful read. This is one of those songs that, I mean, reads that go really well with AP's voice because there's the tenderness in it as he was reading. I think that he really did a fabulous job. And I was looking at his author's notes. It says, write a poem for the contest the first time. And it says, well, who can get away with Roberta Flack / George Michael? That's a tough ask, but then again, I am a son. And I thought that was real a son, S-O-N. And I thought that was really, really sweet because if you tie it back to the first time he looked at his mom and the first time she sang to him, then it takes on another meaning, you know? So it must be we would have to part. While she's gone, I'm not alone, and she's always in my heart. So, you know, I would think that it can tie to many relationships, but for some reason I get the feel of his mom. But it's a beautiful poem.
All right. I guess take a quick minute. If you guys got any shows coming up, AP?
Well, Deb and I have an open poetry show tomorrow night. So get your links on the board for the open poetry show, and we'll go for as long as we go for, Deb.
You got anything else to add, Deb, on the schedule?
Yeah, actually, on Monday, for Personal Prompt Monday, there's still plenty of pictures left to choose from, and we will be writing two quotes by none other than Mr. Pee-wee Cushion. And if I do say so myself, I chose some really great lines from his work to inspire people, and a really cool selection of art from Fine Art America. So grab them while they're there. I don't usually point out one in specific, but for some reason that picture number two, there's something about it. I don't know. Anyway, yeah, that's Monday. So be there or be square. And that is that, sir. And then the Sweets is on the board, and I, like I said, I had asked Sky to take a look at it, so... It doesn't. Sweet didn't answer my text or anything, so I don't think.
Yeah, she's probably tied up. But, I think Sky's got a show to push too, because she just had one that was rescheduled or canceled.
Yeah,
we're rescheduled Thursday night over at Storyboard. We're going onward with Star Wars, and we are celebrating. I think we're on. Hold on, I wasn't prepared. Thank you, Rack, for asking me to plug. It is a postponed show from last week, but it's Ewok Adventures, pretty campy film, but I loved it. So I watched them when I was young, so it doesn't matter how campy they are and graphics are terrible, I still love them. So we are continuing with our Star Wars journey. You could write to any of the themes, characters, and or quotes. If you've ever seen the film, it's okay. Write to a quote, write whatever you want. Or write about Ewoks or mention Ewoks. Use a metaphor saying Ewoks. Do whatever you want. Just bring me a poem. And I'll be there in a clock. Do whatever you want. Yeah. Anyway. That's it. Yeah.
Since Sweet isn't here, Deb, her show's on Thursday, right?
It is, but I'm not seeing what to
what
tell
topic?
People about. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So stay tuned and keep an eye on the topic board for the next one. She posts, and that'll be Thursday night at 10 p.m. Eastern time. And I wasn't there at the end of the show, so I didn't hear whether she mentioned it or not. So just keep your eyes out, everyone.
Keep your eyes peeled for Sweepy. All right. And if you don't mind, Sky?
Yeah, I'd love to. Okay. And I did as you asked, Deb, just so that you know. I gave you the link. Special request. Never loved a girl named Sweet. By Sweepy. On cool white cotton sheets, our bodies melted in the southern heat. In shades of sapphire and magenta hues, his kiss set fire to me, his muse. Emerald eyes. Older and vivid lust, tongue licks lips as hunger struck, hands explore skin from cheek to toes, gently as the blue streams flow, sounds of thunder and silent skies, rising to meet his rhythmic glide, stars burst in kaleidoscope view, falling wish for a second round, fingers glide and twist through lover's hair, and she sleeps on his chest there. Sunshine peeks into her room. She reaches for her lover's hand. to take the moment to understand he was a dream on repeat. He never loved a girl named Mental.
Well, you know, this isn't the first time. I think I've actually got this on one of my lists. She has a way of describing something so beautifully, but, you know, at the same time, you realize what she's talking about is tragic, and the duality of that is what sucks me in all the time to the way that she writes. I just love how she does that, you know. She talks about it wistfully and like, you know, that this is what it's supposed to be, and then you realize it's like, but it's not, and you know, at the same time, she's lifting me up with one hand, she's, you know, dropping it with the other one, and I love how she's able to do that. This is one of my favorite pieces of hers, actually. Never say never, sweet. Anyway, you're at it, Sky. Can you comment for her?
Yeah, I got really sultry there for a minute. I was a little worried. I loved it because I love the way that she took this prompt. Your prompts, might I just go on a side tangent just for a second, are always so wonderful because you can take them in so different ways, so many different ways. You know, people that talk about people that have passed, which they have today. You know, people that are spinning out of their lives, you know, a whole plethora of people with AT, and now we're talking about this idea of a person drifting through our lives who was a dream, which I think was a really clever way and a take on the prompt. It was really well done. It had these wonderful glows of sultry and, of course, nuances with the color of the magenta hues. And bringing in a little bit of the poet splash with the muse. I know she's not typically a rhymer, I guess, but she did this really well. And of course, again, I have to admit the cleverness at the end hooked me with the dream. I really liked that. It really made me smile that it was all just a dream. Really well done.
Yeah. Beautiful comment. And AP, can you comment for me?
Yeah, it was interesting, wasn't it? Because I agree with Sky. It was heading into sort of Deb, sort of PG-15 territory, and then she sort of scooped it up and threw it against the wall, really. She did that in the space of two lines, which is pretty impressive. I really enjoyed it, Rack, and Sky did a wonderful job of reading it.
Thanks, AP. And Deb, you get the final comment before we shut down.
Awesome. And by the way, yes, you do have it on. It's called Signature Sweet Pea. You have it on your list. So do I. But yeah, I remember when she read this one and the tone in her voice as she carried us through this, what we find out towards the end was just a dream. And she switched it up and the sun woke her and she realized that, it takes a moment to understand that he was a dream on repeat and he never loved a girl. And there was something so sad about the thought, you know, never loved sweet, and leaves you or leaves me wondering if this person in the dream is a real person or just a dream person, which would also make a big difference because if it was someone she was longing for and dreaming of and then waking up and realizing that she'll never have that person, I think to me that would be harder than just an imaginary person in your mind for this dream. And you wake up and you're like, oh, okay, you know, that wasn't real. But if it was real and there was a loss for the spot you hold that person in, make it even sadder, you know? So what she got here, 10-ish couplets. It was really, really powerful. And then on top of that, like AP mentioned, it's the rare rhymer for sweet. pull it out and do the rhyme very often, but she does it quite well when she does. And she still evokes that emotion that she always does. Great share. Great
the other thought, Deb, behind what you're talking about, the relationship between the person and the dream too. You know, it could be that it's not just that someone she's longing for. It could be that she misread the person, and you know, this is the person she wanted them to be. So it's very, very, very layered. And again, that's what I love about the way that she writes. She doesn't hand anything to you. You got to sit there and figure it out for yourself. And, you know, again, beautifully done, sweet. So I guess I'll say thank you to everybody that that came and hung out and wrote for me and popped up on the board and took the time to listen. Another episode of Off the Rack brought to you by the AP Taylor Foundation. Find us on allpoetry.com.
And that was an amazing show, Raconteur. And would you like to go out in the same manner that you came in?
Yeah, that works. I like that song.
Love and respect, everyone.
Good night. Thank God.
I was alone, I took a ride, I didn't know what I would find there. Another road where maybe I could see another kind of mind there. Ooh, and I suddenly see you. Ooh, did I tell you I need you every single day of my life? You didn't run, you didn't lie, you knew I wanted just to hold you. And had you gone, you knew in time we'd meet again, for I had told you. Ooh, you were meant to be near me. Ooh, and I want you to hear me say we'll be together every day. Hard to get you into my What can I do, what can I be, when I'm with you I wanna stay there. If I'm true I'll never leave, and if I do I know the way there. Ooh, and I suddenly see you. Ooh, did I tell you I need you every single day of my life. Start to get you in the